Blog Talk Radio.
Latitude zero, longitude zero, planned by the Creator. Sesanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world.
First visit to this historical landmark. Our tour through these hallowed halls will be conducted by the First Lady.
Put your hands together, get up off your newsstand, and welcome.
grandfather killed my great-great-grandfather, and your white-great-grandfather sold my great-grandfather, and your white-grandfather raped my grandmother, and your father stole, cheated, lied, and robbed my father. What kind of a fool would I have to be to say, come, my friend, to the white daughter and son?
Good evening, America. This is your president. Please listen carefully to the announcement I'm about to make. After careful consideration and research, Vice President Duke, Congress, and myself have concluded that black people have not advanced technologically. Their educational testing scores are on a rapid decline. The vast majority of them are on welfare and producing babies at a faster rate than they can support them, and we will not carry them anymore. We are left with no other choice but to put slavery back into effect. All blacks will report to the designated camps in their area to receive further orders. The only blacks excused will be those serving in the United States military and the police. Any blacks who do not cooperate will be terminated immediately. I repeat, slavery is back in effect.
We are at war! That's what I told you. I know you heard what the president said, and if the nigga don't move, then he's dead. It's time for us to take the stand. Woman to woman and man to man. Blood rushes through your veins, you feel the fear. Who'd have thought that it could happen here? In the land of the free, home of the brave. The year's 95, you're a slave. When they first hear the news, press play and then rewind and review. But the message is clear and it cuts just like the knife. You don't surrender, they take your life. And I remember the movies my mama used to show me.
What's your name?
Remember the times when they fought and they sold you. We are at war! That's what I told you. That's what I told you. That's what I told you. That's what I told you.
Warrant on Dave. Two motorcycle officers horribly wounded in a deadly crossfire. The police seemingly unable to rescue them despite of several desperate heroic attempts. It's completely out of
control. Brothers, don't get guns to pack up for an ammunition. Now that they see that it's a critical condition. Racism was here, but they didn't take it seriously. And then they said that I was crazy. Violence escalating, and it's sad to see so many brothers being killed by the enemy. Mothers and daughters and fathers and sons. Why can't they see we couldn't win by the gun? I told you how to win, but now it's too late. The enemy's on the rise, and he steals your face. Greed is a weapon, technology section. The war drum is sounding, the tool is the record. The will and the skill of the black man, exact man. Giving a hand to his brother man. A word to the wise, and I tell you once again. Know your enemy from your friend.
be welcoming you to Africa on the Move, April 14, 2024. This is part two of Haiti, Guyana, and the West. We come to your home this evening, speaking to the powerless and the powerful. We welcome you to join us by dialing in at 323-679-0841. Hit one, and we will give you the opportunity to share your views and your perspectives as we speak on various issues that are impacting our community and humanity. Brother Africa, like always, we will have our political analysts and panelists give their views and perspectives on these issues. So at this point in time, we're going to continue to travel down the road of liberation by bringing in our political panelists and analysts for today's program, followed by a discussion of what's going on in your world and the community. And we speak on that theme, part two, Haiti, Guyana, and the West. So at this point in time, let's get started with our party by bringing you Brother Haki, who is one of our political panelists and analysts for today's program, as he's a member of the African Awareness Association. At this time, we will welcome Brother Haki to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Haki.
Brother Africa, thanks for having me. My name is Haki Kamathi Mushoki. Currently, I'm with African Awareness. But Brother Africa, you know my thing. My thing is all about the institutions inside the community. One of the things, you know, I think is key in terms of, you know, our journey to trying to create those institutions and organizations that are so important to the community. It's the whole question around the role of corporations in society. I think one of the things we got to fundamentally come to grips with is that when we talk about the corporate structure and democracy, the two are not in sync. The notion that corporations and democracy can exist hand in hand is a nefarious assumption. The bottom line, the corporate structure cannot tolerate democracy. In fact, there's a visceral hatred of democracy when it comes to corporations. And I spoke briefly about why it is so, and a little bit about the history in terms of people understand clearly in terms of the role of corporations. And I think it's particularly important that we understand, given the role of corporations in terms of antagonism toward democracy, when we incorporate other kind of things that are taking place in society, then we truly understand just how dire our situation is for African people in the society in terms of addressing a lot of these issues that persist. In any event, Brother Africa, check this out. Attempt for democracy has long been evident. From the start of the corporate structure in 1790, the underlying premise of corporate mission was the enrichment of the wealthy. Concerns relating to the concerns of the working poor were especially condemned as heresy, as at least precisely articulated the role working poor would play in the evolution of corporation in U.S. society. Stipulations were enshrined, highlighting corporate power and the necessity of subservience among the masses of the working poor. Concepts like common good were innovative, but with the purposeful intent to exclude the working poor, instead insisting the common good only pertain to corporations and the wealthy. This precedent of establishing corporations in no way favored democracy over wealth accumulation, but were best expressed by Governor John Hopper Turnbull of Connecticut, who decreed labor is not an equal partner in business. Leading elites concurred with Turnbull's sentiments, but the historical discontent with the corporation's mission was not totally vanquished. Some prominent elites and church artisans held beliefs in colonial America. The role of business should be to improve the lives of the citizenry by using its wealth to improve the lives of the poor, to ensure education for all except the enslaved Africans, particularly with an emphasis on arts and sciences. Such proposals did not end there. In New York State, some contemplated the establishment of a corporate structure with democratic-like features in which the interests of society would take precedent over the narrow interests of the wealthy. Such corporations would embrace the collective good by employing charters with the express purpose of validating democracy. Referred to as benefit corporations or B corporations, the intent was to create businesses uniquely equipped to address social ills in society. Even though this idea was only theory, the solidarity of organized interests prevailed in preventing the idea from germinating. In fact, opposition to corporations acting democratically exists to this very day. Currently, 8 states, West Virginia, Washington State, Virginia, Vermont, Utah, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Rhode Island, all validate the need for benefit corporations on paper, but refuses to openly advocate for real discussion on corporate democracy in America, perhaps owing to the power of corporations. Now, the power of corporations is undeniable, both historically and presently. As far back as 1890, laws have been drafted with the intent to make corporations more democratic. In 1890, the Sherman Antitrust Act was enacted. Its success was somewhat compromised by the Gilded Age, which experienced massive inequality between the rich minority and the poor masses. The formidable power of wealthy organized interests would not relent. Content to restore business policy and interest to the financial elite, the wealthy uses excessive wealth to probe the boundaries of the legal system in hopes of weakening laws that impinge on at least constitutional rights to get rich at any cost. Now, intimately aware of corporation strategy to roll back reforms aimed at promoting accountability by corporations, by 1914, additional laws like the Clayton Antitrust Act, added an additional layer of protection against corporate monopolies used by corporations for the purpose of exploiting the poor in terms of lower wages. By 1938, as a result of Teddy Roosevelt's defense against legal suits filed by the wealthy over 40 times between 1901 and 1909, anti-monopolists were convinced with the passage of the Federal Trade Commissions Act, corporate attempts to game the financial system will come to a halt, and corporate transparency will be assured with little pushback from corporations. They were wrong. Instead, corporations would employ more stealthier strategies, integrating all spirits of society, making corporations unstoppable. This statement is best understood in the context of capitalism's development and the level of control. There are 3 stages. 1, monopoly capitalism between the years of 1895 to 1904. Secondly, finance monopoly capitalism, 1900 to year 1969. And thirdly, financialization, 1981 to the present. While capitalism has always embraced monopoly, given the power bestowed on corporations, the laws imposed by government did constrain corporate exploitation superficially, i.e. the New Deal and the Great Society. However, corporations' desire to avoid democratic ideals have always been supported by being an essential component in the bureaucracy, thereby eliminating any chance of corporate accountability. This behavior exacerbated during a period of financialization. For example, ironically, given the unstable nature of corporate debt during the starting period of financialization, expectations were corporate leaders would be careful not to make speculative investments or huge payouts to senior executives with a decline of profit base. These declines were accompanied by corporate defaults rising and tax cuts for the wealthy to the level of 80% for over 153 corporations, according to the Standard & Poor's, in part because of an unwillingness of most corporations to invest in equipment and employment, thereby lowering output in the process decreasing revenues for the government. For corporate America, such concerns like more production or government revenues seem trivial given sufficient wealth could now be acquired by the wealthy through stock buybacks, regardless of the state of the economy or the level of unemployment. The bottom line is, expansion of corporate responsibility is only relevant if the needs of the populace is valued. Unfortunately, corporate policies do not concern itself with the collective well-being, only the monetary interests of the wealthy and the shareholders. A precedent well established by former President Ronald Reagan, a fierce free market advocate. Now, during the early 1980s, corporations engaged in questionable economic activity that was unprecedented. Corporations began buybacks of its own stock, unilaterally creating higher value stocks without producing or selling inside the United States in relative terms. The lowly $5 billion gain in stock market buybacks in the 1980s mushroomed into $349 billion in buybacks by the year 2006 and continues to increase to this day. The simple strategy of creating wealth out of thin air, once a domain of banks, were now being used by corporations to inflate their wealth and the wealth of their shareholders. Just what did they do with this increase or excessive wealth found?
I think we can hear you now. Yes,
can you hear me?
Hackey. Yes, we can.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. All right. All right. Anyway, okay. All right. So should I go back or just keep going?
Go back a little bit because we lost you about for 30 seconds.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Here we go. All right. Let's go again. Okay. All right. During the early 1980s, corporations engaged in questionable economic activity that was unprecedented. Corporations began buybacks of its own stock, unilaterally creating higher value stocks without producing or selling anything inside the U.S., relatively speaking. The lowly $5 billion gain in stock buybacks in 1980s mushroomed into $349 billion in buybacks in the year 2006 and continues to increase to this day. This strategy of creating wealth out of thin air, once the exclusive domain of banks, were now being used by corporations to inflate their wealth and wealth of their shareholders. Just what did they do with this excessive newfound wealth? They bribed politicians particularly. Generally, it takes between $1 to $10 million to run for Congress and between $10 to $100 million for a Senate seat. With the availability of corporate cash, including government purchase of corporate bonds, the need for money could be easily satisfied, providing for politicians only have to bow down to corporations. In the year 2022, corporations doled out $342 million for federal elections and $3.5 billion in political contributions, up from $3.2 billion previously. Just opposing the benefits of corporate financing schemes, corporations have not only corrupted the political system, they have been instrumental in getting key individuals in positions of power relating to corporate policy, no matter how undemocratic, is rubber stamped. If you recall, Citizens United by the Supreme Court ruled defined corporations as people. By equivocating money is equal to speech, the Supreme Court effectively validates corporations have a greater need to be heard or more right to free speech. The same corporations that ship factories and finances abroad to make senior executives and board members extremely wealthy at the expense of the majority of citizens in the country are now empowered even more to use their wealth to finance right-wing think tanks, right-wing extremists. The paradoxical nature of corporations would be laughable if it was not so sad. The non-democratic reality of corporations and its ability to obtain wealth without labor or production should concern us all. Clearly, corporations based on democracy would be a great asset to society, if and only if it could be achieved. And with that, Brother Africa, I conclude.
Thank you, Brother Hakeem. Next, we make our transition to Brother Anthony, who is a member of the All African Peoples Revolutionary Party. We would like to welcome him to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Anthony.
Thanks, Brother Africa. Revolutionary greetings to you, the fellow panelists, and the listening audience. My name is Anthony Williams. I'm an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Our objective is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. From Brother Anthony, we'll make a transition to Brother Robert Moses, who's a member of the D.C. Metro Coalition in solidarity with the Cuban Revolution. We welcome Brother Moses to Africa on the Move.
Thank you, Brother Africa, and greetings to everyone within the sound of my voice. My name is Robert Andrew Moses, and I've been in the struggle for scientific socialism from the moment I was introduced to Marxism during the government class back in my high school years, 1968. I call Marxism the race to cure racism. I bear witness that there's one God, Jesus, who is the author and finisher of my faith, and that for government, Chairman Mao is his messenger. I bear witness that women hold up half the sky. That's why I'm for the Equal Rights Amendment, ERA, yes. And we don't reverse correct verdicts. I'm pro-choice, and I vote. The struggle continues to be to unite the many, defeat the few. The struggle continues to be to emancipate the female sex as a measurement of the emancipation of society, and the extent of emancipation of the female sex is the extent of the emancipation of society. And so we say, revolutionary greetings to everyone in the struggle for self-determination and independence of thought, independence of action, independence of the bourgeois opportunists who are bought off section of our society, who have privileges and have basically sold their souls to the enemy. And love of money is the root of all evil. So we say, help us to serve the people and keep politics in command. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. We now move forward with Sister Eleanor Johnson, who is also a member of the D.C. Metro Coalition in solidarity with the Cuban Revolution. We welcome her to Africa on the Moon. Welcome, Sister Eleanor.
Thank you, Brother Africa, and good evening to our listening audience in the United States and abroad, and to my fellow panelists and to you, Brother Africa. My name is Eleanor Johnson, and yes, I am a member of the Coalition in Solidarity with the Cuban Revolution. I am an artist and a human rights activist. Today in the District of Columbia, people are celebrating Emancipation Day. The slaves were emancipated April 16, 1862 in the district. Just a little tribute, and thank you so much for allowing me to participate in this evening's forum. Thank you.
We thank you for your service, Sister Eleanor. At this point in time, what we're going to do, we're going to make a transition to the first part of our program, which deal with what's going on in your world and the community. You know, from time to time, you run across something that strikes your interest and make you think and say, this is what we're going to do right now under this segment. We're going to play a quick clipping of Trick Baby dinner scene where they talk about how to create a slave. And what they'll be saying can tie into our discussion piece for this section, which is the issue of, and it's a very interesting question, and the question is, and the discussion will be on, African people was not ready for freedom, or African people are not ready for freedom. We want you to carefully listen to this presenter, who we believe is speaking to some university students in Tanzania, South Africa, on this question of Africans and freedom. So we want to have that particular discussion with our political panelists and analysts. And like always, you, the listening audience, can join in by dialing in at 323-679-0841. 323-679-0841. So let's have this discussion.
It's you liberals who have lifted them up, Howard.
Paul, you conservatives make a mistake. You can't afford to strangle hope in people.
Without hope, people become dangerous.
No, Howard. You liberals have let them invade our society. You give them jobs, political jobs.
Paul, you missed the point. It's only the smart ones we move up.
That makes it even worse.
No, we have to move them up. If we leave a smart one in the ghetto, he might develop into a leader against us. But if we raise him up into white society, we neutralize him. He feels compelled to try to act like us. He loses his identity and his racial anger, if he has any. He becomes alien to his brothers. They realize he sold them out and they grow to hate him. He becomes worthless to them and safe for us.
No, thank you. In fact, in his love for the creature comforts, except for his color, he's become one of us.
When he's at the back, I'll introduce you to him. He came to fix my jacket. He's project managing the whole program for us. Some of you asked me on social media what happened to the hub and vendor. Before you go, I want to say something, and this is going to go on the record, so I know I'll be destroyed for this, but it's my truth, so it. Black people were not ready for freedom. We weren't. We were not ready for freedom. I studied everywhere we have been liberated, whether or not we were able to liberate ourselves from our own bondage. And it's a deep question. So study us as a people. This is not a criticism, it's a reflection. If you differ, I'm happy to share perspectives. But study us as a people. You notice that everywhere where we are in bondage, we are phenomenal at fighting for our liberation. Once we've received it, something goes wrong. And the mindset is pervasive. And it's pervasive, it's invasive, it's insidious. It's like a virus. And if you try and remove, you know, once a virus takes over a cell, it multiplies. And so the reason you can't remove the virus is the only way to kill it is to kill the host. That's where we are. So when a person amongst us does something, rather than celebrate, we ridicule. Rather than collaborate, we compete. Rather than support, we sabotage. I thought long and hard about why is this, like it's been bugging me. And then I realized something, that whether it was apartheid, colonization, the Jim Crow laws in the US, all of those systems of oppression had one singularity in communication. They said to black people, only one. So in slavery days, there was only one house nigger. The rest of y'all worked in the field. When we negotiated for our South Africa, there was only Mandela at CODESA. All the other political parties had to sit and watch the ANC. When we got our liberation, there was only one Cyril at the board. Only one. So when a black person makes it, the rest of us go, shit, he's taken the seat. That's why we practice crabs in a bucket. We go, the only way I get that seat is if Nyamtata was in Mbegala. We don't think multiplier. Make sense? So he's going, I want to make a supercar. Nobody's going, how do I make tires for a supercar? We all go, shit, now he's done it. I'm telling guys, this is my most honest reflection. And I thought about, do I make it a bit? Do I share it on social media? I was just like, the time will come. This is felt right at the time. People will see this and I'll get slated for it, I'm sure. But I'm telling you now, if you, I see it with me. The only people who attack are the people who want the seat. But here's what you're not seeing. I'm sitting where I'm sitting, and where I'm sitting, the system I'm fighting, if I get it right, opens for all of us. So, you know, it's the guy who fights Maxhosa. It's the guy who fights Tulasindi. It's the guy who fights the Trevor Noah. What you don't recognize is what they are doing in their spaces makes it okay for us to be in those spaces. So don't fight Bar to fight Nike. Don't fight Maxhosa, fight Gucci. Do you get it? Like, it's all wrong, guys. The mindset is this thing. Hey, man, you must be here. You know? My uncle always says this, Ngana, how nana do la oblanda at some point? How nana do? Okay, cool. So the point I'm making, and so I don't want to get into the details of what happened in Venda, but let me put it to you this way. We got sabotaged. We went in, we got the land. I invested over 8 million rand building our hub. We went in local supplies. Everything in my hub was done by local people. The paving, the electrification, the fencing. 8 million rand I pumped into the local economy of Toyando. Then you know what happened? Couple sabotage. The municipal manager, the mayor, the commissioner of police, the police station manager, even the judge at the high court were all in on it. Said this publicly, let him sue me, I got the money. And I asked myself, why would they do it? Because very simple, in their minds, a young guy can't just come. No. He must respect first. And he's just like, I'm trying to change the world. You know, like, our hub was going to be free, guys, free. State-of-the-art, running 4G networks. We're offering 200 accredited courses with the University of Pretoria, 100 more by Gibbs, and 100 by the London School of Economics. Collectively, the courses alone are going to cost me $4 million. I was going to find young entrepreneurs in the area, educate them for free to walk out with a diploma or degree. Then I was going to give them a hub that runs for free. You can just come and use it. Network, Wi-Fi, anything you want, just come and use it. It's yours. Why? Because it just makes sense to. And the old people didn't see it that way. I think a lot of us are going to have to make a decision about who we're going to give the future of this continent to. Because the people in charge now, the old ones, they ain't got a clue what they're doing. They don't have a clue what they're doing. When you're going to pitch at that big business, I'm going to share some news for you. I want to listen to this gentleman. When you're going to pitch for that opportunity at that big business, let me tell you, Bantonda is the one supporting you. Mandla Sbego at the board is one going, ah, no. Now, I know I've said some stuff that have cut deep, but you know what it hurt? Well, not to say it only hurts if it's true. My brother, over to you.
Welcome back to Ask Golden Moon. You are listening to a presentation. A brother in the Zambia, in South Africa, speaking to some student youth at university. He raised a real fundamental question. And the question was, African people was not or are not ready for freedom. I'm just wondering to my political panelists and this, as you heard this particular clipping, what were your first thoughts as you reflected back on what he just conveyed? We start off with Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, your general thoughts on his statements about African people were not or are not ready for freedom. Brother Anthony.
My general thought is that he is correct. When it came to fighting for fighting oppression against various forms of domination such as slavery, Jim Crow, and apartheid, we were able to fight with vigor. However, let's see, one of the weapons our enemies used against us was individualism. And you know, and the thing about it though, it seems like wherever we fought for our freedom, we fell victim to the same weapon, and that is individualism, and that's because we did not understand that once we got our freedom, it has to be defended, and that's the start of a longer and even more protracted struggle. And Africans throughout the world are realizing now, even though a lot of countries in Africa were able to get sham independence, they did not have the tools necessary to defend it once they obtained it. And that has been why we've experienced so many setbacks and why Pan-Africanism is necessary in order to ensure our freedom. And it's only through organization and uniting working together and seeing the success of one as the success of all, that we will be able to realize our freedom. And, you know, so I think it's the lack of a revolutionary ideology that guide our actions that comes into play. And that's why we need permanent organization guided by revolutionary ideology.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. We make a transition to Brother Haki. As you heard this presentation, and he raised the issue of the question that African people was not or not ready for freedom. What was your general thoughts, Brother Haki?
Well, Brother Africa, I don't think the brother was articulating anything, you know, that those of us who have been involved in struggle for a long period of time don't understand. Certainly, one of the things I think, you know, when we talk about this in terms of, you know, trying to, you know, consolidate, you know, after, you know, after you pose your movement, there are some issues, and a lot of issues pertain to the psychology, you know, of the individual or the group. Certainly, one of the things when you talk about in terms of one of the things that made it almost makes it extremely difficult in terms of implementing real autonomy, has a lot to do in terms of tradition. It's very interesting if you talk about tradition in the context of, you know, elders versus youth. I mean, there's a great tendency among older people to disregard what young people have to say, and a lot of that is understandable. I mean, we come out of tradition which says that you respect your elders, and in order for us to respect the elders, then it presupposes that or assumes, you know, that we adopt a certain position relative that senior. In that context, when you question the senior, and the senior doesn't get what you're saying, the senior don't turn around and say, okay, could you better define what you're saying or interpret what you're saying, because I'm not quite clear on what you're saying. Because the whole tradition in terms of, you know, elders being right is so prominent that they're not likely to do that. So it gets in the way in terms of really trying to create a situation for real change, because we have to dispense with this notion in terms of because of my age that I'm much more knowledgeable than you because of your age. And so we have to dispense with that. But that's easier said than done, because this is part and parcel of tradition, and he and his brother alluded to that. Also, we can't discount the question in terms of self-hatred, Brother Africa. I mean, let's be very, very clear. You open up the piece with the guy talking about how to divide the African community by hiring a few African people and, you know, and building them up, you know, get them on our side. Well, we have to understand that is not mere rhetoric. That is reality in terms of the way we think, a lot of us think. We really think that we're comfortable with one of us making it. We're so conditioned watching television or even in the community or these businesses, and we see that we have one person. And so we've become comfortable with that. We don't have a problem with that. We say, well, they're integrated because they got one person who happens to be an African or a person of color, you know, in that organization. And we're comfortable with that, not with that. And so in that regard, I think, you know, so when we start talking about defining, you know, what it is to be exceptional, I think that any tendency, you know, when that one individual receives some type of limelight or some type of success, I think that the implication is that for a lot of people, you know, he's seen as the exceptional one. And in other words, he's exceptional. And that means that because he's the exceptional one, that means I can never be the exceptional one. I want to be the exceptional one. So then, therefore, that's a certain kind of envy, kind of jealousy that takes place in terms of directed toward that person who have achieved, as opposed to saying, listen, the brother or the sister achieved, let's work with the brother or sister in terms of building, because they created a catalyst in terms of bringing about the kind of changes that we seek. But it's all psychological, Brother Africa, and this is the fundamental problem we're talking about. So we can't dismiss the role of the in the United States, we talk about 400 years of psychological oppression. On the continent, we talk about 1,500 years of psychological oppression. We can't dismiss the role in terms of the impression, in terms of the impact on our mind. And Brother Anthony is right. And to the extent it's going to be nullified, we have to have a political consciousness, and where we understand that, you know, when we feel certain kind of ways, then we have enough insight within ourselves to question why we feel a certain way and to understand that the way we feel is a product of conditioning. If we don't fundamentally understand the product of conditioning, then we tend to embrace it as though these feelings that are counterproductive are just somehow natural. And so it's all psychological. And last, let me just say this, Brother Africa. I think also one thing, this whole question, and a lot of people may perceive this tendency among a lot of our people to turn on, leaders, legitimate leaders in the African community as a function of class. I think it's much deeper than class. I think there seems to be a real visceral opposition, to empowerment. And to a lot of that, I think it has to do with the fact that, if we talk about classism, then certainly one of the things that one person has been very, very successful in how to, in particular this brother's case, he talks about expanding technology and so forth to create opportunity and jobs and education for people, which is a benefit to the entire community. So in that regard, you can't see it as classism because he's not benefiting individually. He's trying to empower an entire group of people. And so it's not classism that constitutes this attempt to diminish what the brother's doing. So again, it's psychological. So I think on a visceral level, I think when we talk about tendency in terms of sabotaging any potentiality which could actually empower a large number of people has more to do not only with a subtle kind of jealousy, I think, but I think it has more to do in terms of this visceral hate that comes from in terms of just who you are, as an African person in society. If you think that, in fact, African people are not, for whatever reason, intellectually up to par in terms of bringing about the need to change in society, then you don't support them because you don't think that they're deserving or capable in terms of being able to fulfill those kind of things that are need. Even when that individual demonstrates that they have the capabilities and the skills to actually do that which benefits the entire community. So a lot of this, Brother Africa, is all psychological. And as Brother Anthony said, unless we can do something to undermine that psychology, then we tend to embrace these kind of self-defeatist attitudes or these self-defeatist perceptions in our minds, which says that we can't do. And so those who actually try to do, then they simply come, we discount them simply out of illusion or the misconception that somehow that these individuals are not truly capable of doing what they're actually doing. So all that is psychological. So we have a lot of work to do in terms of psychological, in terms of changing our psychological disposition. And this is why it's so important in terms of institutions, organizations in the community to make damn sure we wipe it out of our children, make sure our children don't grow up with that mindset. This is why we have to have these institutions, organizations in the community, because if our kids grow up with that mindset, which is reinforced by adults in the community, then one thing's for sure, our ability in terms of dealing with the situation that we have to deal with becomes compromised to a great extent. So we have to fundamentally, equip our kids to be able to self-critique, to be able to mix, to analyze, to make sense of what's going on in the world and their place in that world. And I'll close with that.
Yes, Brother Moses. We're going to make our transition to Brother Moses. And Brother Moses, when you just heard this particular audio clipping, as the brother was speaking to this whole issue of whether or not African people were ready for freedom, what was your general thoughts on that, Brother Moses?
Thank you, Brother Africa. Let's analyze this thing from a scientific, socialist, dialectical, historical, materialist approach. First of all, when people are enslaved, they're enslaved. They're dominated. They're persecuted, and they have no freedom. So to talk about them not being ready for freedom is ridiculous. Of course, they're always ready for freedom. It's always good time for freedom. His petty bourgeoisie is evident. He has a certain amount of wealth, and his individualism comes through. He's talking about what he's done and what he's trying to do, The petty bourgeoisie is characterized by bourgeois ideology. They have a little bit of wealth, and they try to exploit the working class to help them empower themselves instead of empowering the working class and having a collective approach to the problem, organizing people around a collective and empowering the people. They want to do their individual thing and have everybody support them. And they get the power and they get the glory ultimately, instead of empowering the people. And that's characteristic of the petty bourgeoisie. And I'll just leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. And Sister Eleanor, your thoughts? Sister Eleanor.
Yeah, the whole idea of enslavement, as Brother Africa, as Brother Moses said, it does have to do with a class struggle. And there is a struggle that we face with neocolonialism, and that though this guy was a member of the petty bourgeoisie, and as Brother Anthony Moses and I keep pointing out, individualism as a problem, but also neocolonialism, in that he was stopped, his business plan was squashed because of maybe neocolonialism, or maybe the fact that as a member of the petty bourgeoisie, he usurped the community and its rules and structure. You know, so the reality is that liberation is something that the masses undertake and should gain. Now, there are an elite few of people, elite petty bourgeoisie in South Africa, in the United States, who throughout the oppressed nations. However, that doesn't represent the freedom and the self of the masses. So it's unfortunate that his business plan failed with the 8 million, as he said, the 8 million. I forgot what currency it was that he invested. I thought it was the rand, 8 million rand. I'm not sure. But it was an interesting video, and it would motivate and inspire other educated and aspiring persons to do different things. And one thing he did speak about that was important was this individualism that is promoted in the black community. That was his point. Individualism. Not him as an individual and his individualism, but what the community. He spoke about the ANC hadn't taken over when the Zulu and everyone had fought for the elimination of apartheid. But when Nelson Mandela was given the center stage, no other people were at the table. And how we had this, the exploiters, the imperialists realized that promoting one of us discourages all of us. And the one often thinks of themselves as being superior to the masses. So there's a type of individualism that is promoted within the masses that lends itself to oppression and underdevelopment of the working class community in the arena of education as well as economic growth, you know. And he talked about the, you know, Jim Crow. It was interesting. It was well spoken in the United States. He talked about apartheid in South Africa, and the reality is that the powers that be, when the system is falling, they set up one person to be the leaders of everyone else, and it is discouraging to the masses.
Thank you,
you know, it takes, and he used an important analogy of when someone invents a new car, an electric car, think about developing tires or think about developing other things that would service the industry rather than just giving up when you see one advancement by one person. Rather work collectively. That was the focus of his comments was collective work and activity. Now, whether or not he had the tools to do, I don't know, because he did talk about how he employed all local labor and all of this. But as one of my fellow analysts said, he wasn't doing a collective. He was the boss and the leader, and they were the workers. Thank you.
Thank you, Seth Elmore. What we're going to do at this point, guys, it's interesting hearing some of your comments and some of the points that he made in his presentation. Before I highlight those particular points, I would like each one of y'all just to deal with this particular perspective. And the perspective is that given the fact that we are an oppressed people, we were forced to adopt a language that wasn't naturally ours, which limited us and our ability to conceive. Also, by being oppressed people, we only can speak basically one language, and when you're dealing with billions of people in the world with other billions of languages, it limits us from being able to even communicate and have other ideas with other people based upon how we can look at nature in the world. So in that sense, it sort of limits us and controls us. And I say all of this because I like to hear each one of y'all general understanding that when we talk about freedom, I think there's a issue of people's conception what freedom is and how it looks. Some people argue there are different levels of freedom, and what does that even mean? Now, he says something that I think is very important. We're talking about the question of language and words. He used the word, once we receive our freedom. Is freedom something that you receive, or is it something that you earn, something that you take? Because if we keep seeing freedom as something you receive, which I interpret as someone who's given it to you, then you never had freedom from the beginning. And maybe that's the starting point, where we have to start re-looking at and redefine what is freedom and how do you get it. Brother Anthony, your response to my narrative.
You're correct. Freedom is something that that is taken. You take your liberty. It's not something that's given or you receive. And you're right, receive does imply that someone else gives it to you. Freedom is something that you take and you work for. And as I stated earlier, we have to change the way we think, and that's easier said than done, and that's because the enemy controls our educational system. That is why, you know, you can't depend on the elders to lead us out of this situation, because they are imbued with the enemy's ideas and what have you, and you know, so we can only get our freedom by throwing off individualism. And, engaging in class struggle among ourselves to rid ourselves of the ideas of the bourgeoisie that are within us. And they've been inculcated through the hundreds of years of oppression.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Brother Haki, your take on this question of one of the problems I think oppressed people have is their conception of freedom, particularly in the African community. And many times when we talk about freedom, it's always being described as the uses of the word we receive. When you receive something, it means someone gave you something. And we use that perception, and then we can begin to see maybe why we continue to have issues of moving forward around achieving this thing that we call freedom. Just your general response to this question of the usage of words, particularly when we talk about receiving freedom versus it's something that you have to earn, something you have to take, something that you create the conditions for. Brother Hackey, your response.
Yeah, well, I got a different perspective on what the brother was saying. I don't think the connotation was that he expect anybody to give him anything. I think he's speaking from a historic perspective. I think what he's saying is that given the fact that that South Africa is somewhat liberated in the sense that at least the political apparatus is controlled by the Africans, but the economic system is controlled by the white minority in South Africa. So in that regard, in terms of actually enjoying real freedom, has actually arrived yet. So I think when he said to receive freedom, I think he's saying that in order for us to be truly free, those things, both the economic system and political system, as well as the social system, have to be conquered in terms of also be legitimately free. I think that's the point that he was trying to make. I don't think he's dismissing the fact that that the struggle that they waged somehow was not valid. I think he's very much conscious of the fact that the struggle that the PAC, the ANC waged against the apartheid state was needed. In fact, without it, South Africa would still be in bondage. So I don't think he's negating in terms of the necessity in terms of struggle. I think what he's saying is that given the process, and I think that's certainly scientifically sound, when we look at in terms of the state of South Africa currently, clearly a lot of the problems that South Africa endured during the time of apartheid are still present today to a large extent because the economic system is still controlled by the white minority. And that doesn't excuse the corruption of the so-called ANC party. It doesn't excuse that at all. But I think what he's saying is that in terms of receive, I think he's talking about, in order for us to get there, we have to be all clicking on the same cylinder in terms of being truly free. So I think when he says receive, I think he's sort of being thinking in terms of a process. And I close with that.
Thank you, Brother Hackey. Brother Moses, your thought on this concept of equating freedom with receiving it and just the whole issue of how people conceive this concept of freedom. Maybe that's the first thing we still need to dabble collectively. What is it that we mean by freedom? But just your general take on this question, receive. Can you receive freedom?
Thank you, Brother Africa. Freedom. What is freedom? And, the ability to control your destiny, basically self-determination and independence of thought as opposed to the oppressor's thought being dominating you. And you have the independence to determine who you are, where you are, and what you need, what needs to be done. And you have a sense of what is fair and what is just and what is your just portion of society. And you have to take your just portion of society and defend it. This freedom is a struggle. It's a struggle. I mean, all the societal order is dominated by bourgeois ideology, dominated by the ruling class, and so you have to be able to see how you fit into the system and what is just and what is fair, and so that obviously is a subjective factor involved in that. Although the objective conditions are there, who feels it knows it. The objective conditions are there, but it takes political consciousness, awareness of the forces that are oppressing you, and why and how they're oppressing you, and then to say demand your rights. There are a lot of examples of people taking their freedom. Haiti took their freedom, but they were ready for freedom, but the oppressor isn't ready to it's not going to give up. The oppressor is going to continue the policies of the past in new ways, and that's how neocolonialism takes place. And so, It's not that we aren't ready for freedom, but we are overwhelmed. That's how we were oppressed in the first place, because we were overwhelmed. And so until the oppressor is completely defeated, we're going to be struggling and struggling and struggling, because the oppressor, nothing reactionary falls. If it's on the court, it has to be toppled. And French imperialism, U.S. imperialism in Haiti is still rampant today. And, you know, that doesn't mean that Haiti wasn't ready for freedom. That means that the oppressor is determined to maintain his system of exploitation. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Sister Eleanor, your response to equate freedom with something being received? Your thoughts, Sister Eleanor.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Brother Africa. Can you repeat what you said?
Your response to this idea that freedom is something that you can receive. Can you receive freedom? And it's part of the issue of struggle, it's just a whole conception of how we see freedom, what it is.
No, freedom is something that people have to take. And what happens, the reason people think it's a gift as a demonstration of their continued oppression. So they may have certain freedoms, social freedoms, academic freedoms, the elimination of apartheid, for example, in South Africa. But there's still open class oppression. And as the analyst said, the economy is controlled by a limited number of whites. I do understand that now the wealthiest black woman or African woman on earth is living in South Africa. But the reality is that Soweto is still an oppressed community. And, you know, whenever you have capitalism and you have a imbalance of the division of labor and wages, you have oppression. And the bottom line is freedom isn't given, it's taken. It was, you know, the end of chattel slavery was something that was taken. The civil rights movement in the United States of the 1950s and 60s was an activity of class struggle, and it was taken. The colonialist empires pulling out of Africa was not something given, it was taken. And Sekou Touré spoke about that, as well as Sekou Hamed, the liberator of Guinea. And we saw liberation movements in Ghana, and Ghana offered a repatriation program for African Americans and other oppressed people of chattel slavery throughout the Americas. But there was no way to have the finance capital to make that possible. So the reality is freedom is never given. It's never given. You can set your dog free to starve. Well, you know, freedom isn't something that's given. It's something that's won through struggle, through class struggle, either by the ballot or by the bullet. But it's not a gift. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. Thank you, Sister Eleanor. Your panelists, even there's several behaviors or conditions in how African people respond to success by other African people as a quote-unquote individual. And I'd like for y'all to speak to these conditions. But one of the questions I was thinking and want to raise is, are these conditions and behavior unique just to African people, or are these universal behavior for any groupings of people who are coming out of oppression or who are being oppressed? He stated that many times when one is arrived or success, in, we should celebrate our brother and sister's success and not ridicule them. Is this something unique just to African people, or is this a universal behavior when you look at all oppressed people? Have your response. Celebrate versus ridicule, Brother Anthony.
I don't think it's unique to Africans necessarily. I think, because I think, for example, the Irish have been fighting the English for their liberation for nearly 800 years. And the indigenous people, since the Europeans invaded the Western Hemisphere, have been fighting for their freedom. So I don't think the reactions are unique to Africans. I think, because one of Nkrumah's many lessons is that the ideology of a society, even though it comes from one particular sector, is unitary. In other words, it seeks to unite people toward common goals and objectives. And, so even though bourgeois ideology represents the ideology of a particular sector of people, it seeks to unite everybody towards the same goals in which it finds itself. Which is why bourgeois ideology is so pervasive, is because the bourgeoisie controls the educational system throughout the world, with the exception of a few countries that are struggling to build socialism, such as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, Cuba, and Venezuela.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Brother Haki, he raised another behavior among oppressed people, and you were talking about African people in this sense. And again, is it unique just among African people or all oppressed people in general? Can you speak to this issue of this whole question or collaborate versus competing? You see, we have a tendency, instead of collaborating with each other, we find ourselves competing. Is this something that is done because systematically we function under a society and a system that does not encourage or create conditions for collaboration, but it constantly trying to reinforce that we should compete? Your response to that narrative, Brother Haki.
Yeah, well, Brother Africa, I think he anticipates a lot of fallout, from that comment. I think he realizes that. You're right. When we talk about this whole question in terms of competition, what was it? Competition versus hold on one second. I'm sorry, Brother Africa. Competition, it was compete versus what now?
He put the two actions of collaborating versus competition. He said instead of we collaborate with each other, we find ourselves when we're doing things or perceive it being successful, we try to go in competition with each other at the expense versus not collaborating with each other.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry, Brother Afi. I was thinking something else. Anyway, You're absolutely correct, Brother Africa. One of the things, you know, you can't talk about, you know, transforming, you know, formerly oppressed people overnight. It's going to take some work and take some time. More importantly, you have to have institutions that reinforce certain kind of values. You certainly can't expect, you know, oppressed people who come up on a system which reinforces a competition to certainly reject, you know, this whole idea of competitions when they're being indoctrinated to believe that competition is a natural way of being in terms of human beings. So in that context, without these social institutions in place to sort of gradually get people to understand that the way to be constructed society is for people to collaborate, to work together. That's how you do it. But they don't arbitrarily come to that realization, you know, simply because, you know, at the conclusion of a major movement. So clearly, Brother Africa, you're absolutely correct. And I think the brother understands that, you know, this question in terms of, collect, somehow that Africans are committed to this whole competition thing, I think that he failed to understand the role of institutions. And because he failed to understand the role of institutions, I think he failed to understand that any possibility of any kind of real change in terms of providing a role, you know, to real empowerment comes from collaboration. So you're right. This is not an African phenomenon. This is a human phenomenon. This is how all oppressed people behave. This is the whole struggle. And this is why I keep saying that you have to inculcate in our children certain kind of values in terms of their longevity in society. If our children maintain these values and they've been inculcated or they have internalized, then we can anticipate more self-destructive kinds of behavior emanating from our children. So we have to change the way our children see the world, how to see themselves. And they have to understand the role in terms of collaboration, working with each other. If they don't understand that, if they see this competition like capitalism teaches us, then they're going to work against others in terms of in hopes of securing some kind of advantage over the others in terms of the whole thing we call competition. So clearly, I think Brother Africa, he understands that he can expect a lot of feedback from that particular statement, because in fact he's somehow making the social conditions Africans have to endure somehow implying that there's somehow, you know, African people are only people subjected to certain kind of behaviors based upon their historical experience in terms of oppression. So that's totally false. All people behave that way. All oppressed people behave that way. It doesn't matter what part of the world you're in. It's unique to all oppressed people. And the process of undoing it involves social institutions. And I conclude.
Thank you, Brother Haki. Brother Moses, your thoughts on the issue of we do less supporting and more sabotaging. How can we avoid that kind of behavior, Brother Moses, given the fact that we come under a system where it's trying to reinforce this is what we should do when we view ourselves as an enemy? So just speak to the question of support versus sabotage, Brother Moses.
Certainly, we have a collective responsibility to liberate ourselves, and we can only do this collectively. We can't as individuals come to liberation. Certainly, you know, there are certain privileges and little perks or whatever you want to call them that come with individual aspirations and individuals achieving certain things for themselves. But we have to think in terms of the collective whole. Until everyone is free, no one is free. And we have to think like that. And the bourgeoisie, the ruling class, has its ideas, which dominate society, which says, you know, individualism, and that we can all become rich if we just keep working at it. The society is just, the society is fair, and everyone is subject to the rules of law. This is the dominant ideology that society pushes on us, and we have to see what is possible. That's why Marx, Engels, and Stalin and Mao Zedong are so important. They have a vision of the government serving the people, and what is necessary for the government to serve the people, and what kind of policies, what kind of practices the people need in order for their interests to be served. The working class needs a government that has offers free education, a government that offers health care. And we need to have a vision, a possibility that says this is possible and that we should work and achieve it. We shouldn't have a defeatist attitude that that only what's here is going to be here forever. And so we have to take our destiny in our own hands, in other words. And this is easier said than done, but we must do it. And, you know, without a vision, the people perish. And so we have to have that vision of possibilities that, you know, Mao, Finkelstein, and Stalin, and Mao are applicated and struggled for. And in terms of dialectical historical materialism, it's important to know their works are true and their works have sustained the test of time. And so we must study and render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, which means we have to have a separation of church and state, and that we need a government that is secular and not just a religious theocracy or something. And so, you know, this is a struggle, and every day we have to struggle against all kinds of ideologies and struggle for the truth. I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Sister Eleanor, your thoughts on the issue where the system is a system of oppression and systematized this concept of one, the concept of a lot of time they always make you think you're making history by being the first. Again, that's another form of oneness. So when they tell us that we are successful by getting us one person access to a position that normally we are being blocked from, they use that as a tool to make us think that this is where we should be at, a position of one. So speak to that game that's been played when we look at our people and got people believing that, you know, we should be limited by a position of one, not a position of multitude of African people being able to participate in any and all arenas in any society when you're talking about this issue of freedom. Sister Eleanor, your thoughts?
Well, this individualism where we are always the chosen one, we can only have one success story, is a way of fostering oppression and keep the imperialist economy alive and the imperialist control alive. This the very concept, and it works from the bottom to the top, where you divide and conquer. Langston Hughes, in his September 1929 edition of his magazine, had a poem called The Willie Lynch Story, and the whole notion was to divide and conquer. So, of course, they're holding one African up as the success while using that African to repress others. And when I say Africans, I'm not talking about brothers and sisters on the continent alone. I'm speaking of the people, the diaspora in the United States and other oppressed countries. There's a lack of collective struggle and equity, and that is fostered in our community through this individualism, this narrow perspective of family and state, thinking that oh, we are successful, we are organized, we did this, but never thinking of the collective we or the masses. So that's a very popular tool, and it's very successful. And the CIA and other oppressors, whether it's the FBI domestically or the CIA abroad, has been using that and other tools as well as creating economic havoc in the community. For example, food deserts exist all over African communities, and they're taking back urban communities in the United States by gentrifying and taking a $90,000 home and turning it into $1.5 million home. Didn't anything change but the ownership? So this whole promotion of individuals and individualism is an effective weapon used in the community, as I said, from the bottom to the top, to divide and conquer. It's an example of the Willie Lynch story. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. Brother Anthony, you know, many times when you are given the inclusion and inclusion and promotion as receiving a position of one, it becomes very hard to think about multiplying and bringing other people in with you because they get the illusion that you were something special. So to those who are functioning under the capitalist system and having access to higher level of production, what can you say or what can we do to show that when we reach certain status of so-called success, we continue to have the mindset of it's not about oneness, it's about many, many Africans also having the same means to do the same thing. What are some of your thoughts in terms of how can we keep from being conceited when we arrive at these kind of positions? Your thoughts, Brother Anthony?
Yes, my thoughts are on that are what an individual achieves is a product of the community he or she grows up in. In other words, it is because of the work of the masses of the people that make it possible for you to get your schooling, your education, your athletic or academic achievements. It is not just on the individual necessarily. We have to realize that every individual is a product of the community they grew up in. And if you look at it from that perspective, it keeps you grounded among the people, because it is due to the people that you succeed or have setbacks in your life's journey. And I think it's because under this capitalist system that most of us grew up under, we don't have that understanding. And it's only until we get that understanding that we realize the truism that Kwame Ture taught many years ago, that seen in a classroom is the result of the work of the people. It is not something you earn by yourself. It is through the work of the people that made it possible for you to get that seat and that degree.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. And Brother Haki, before we go on our revolutionary culture break, I would like for you to respond to the issue that he raised when the context is, even if you are a so-called wealthy or so-called successful individual. You will be confronted with the system still stacked up against you and trying to undermine you and make you less successful. I'm saying this because I'd like to hear your thoughts. What would you say to those who have access to wealth today and don't see that the real issue is they must destroy the economic, political, capitalist system if they truly gonna have real wealth and will be able to be profitable in terms of their journey within their long-term lifetime? What would you say to him? Because I thought he made that a very critical point of making people realize, even if you think you're successful, you never really will be successful as long as the system is intact and all of its various institutions going to act out against your interests. Your response, Brother Hakeem?
Yeah, well, you know, Brother Africa, it comes down to a question in terms of how you define success. If you're going to define success in terms of capitalist terms, then it comes down to strictly material gain, strictly. Just nothing else matters, just money. That's it. And so to the extent that people internalize this concept in terms of successful as it relates to money, then clearly when you start talking about in terms of their obligation, you know, to humanity or to their community, it falls on deaf ears because they're simply looking at, listen, if I assist others in the community or help humanity, that is equivalent of me giving away part of myself. I can't do that, and they're not going to do that. So we have to expand this whole understanding in terms of what it is by what we mean by success. If we can get people to accept a more holistic understanding in terms of what constitutes success, then they will begin to understand or begin to see that in terms of using their wealth in terms of the betterment of humanity, the betterment of the community, it's in their long-term interest. And when we talk about in terms of their long-term interest, I mean, it's a situation where, you know, all of the petty antagonism that exists day in and day out that people have to endure, you know, just to survive in society. If you have the means in terms of making sure, you know, that you create conditions, we sort of mitigate, you know, this kind of hustle bustle that exists in society, then you sleep much better at night. You can leave your doors unlocked. You can walk the street without fear of being mugged or robbed or being killed. So there are long-term benefits in terms of redefining what success really means. Of course, in the context of America, one of the things when we talk about success is going to be is an uphill climb because a lot of people have internalized the notion in terms of success being equated purely in monetary terms. And so to the extent that we can sort of mitigate that perception, without the institutions, the bottom line, it becomes extremely difficult to mitigate that perception. So since we don't have the institution, the best we can do is in terms of informing our children in terms of some of these shortfalls in terms of internalized success purely from a capitalist standpoint. One of the things that, you know, we also have to include, Brother Africa, when you start talking about being successful, to some extent, you have to begin to look at yourself in terms of what it means in terms of your own being. If success is defined in terms of materialism, then if I don't have any materialism, then what does that say about me? You know, something that means there's something fundamentally wrong with me. If I internalize the notion that something fundamentally wrong with me, and it exists on an unconscious level, doesn't necessarily exist on a conscious level. People who are conscious of that are not going to tell you that they feel less of a human being. They're not going to tell you that. Or manifest in terms of the way they behave or the things that they say. But clearly, so to the extent that we internalize the notion in terms of that material things define who we are as a human being, we can never arrive at a true formula in terms of what it is to be successful. So again, unless success is holistic, unless it embraces the needs of yourself, your community, humanity, then it's a self-defeating kind of success over a narrow kind of capitalist success, which only leads to more destruction, pain, and heartache. That we have to fundamentally reject. And with that, I conclude.
Thank you for that response, Brother Hakeem, and to our listening audience. This is Brother Africa speaking on Africa on the Moon. Africa on the Moon is a weekly political Pan-African talk show that comes on every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It's under the banner of the African Awareness Association, and you can join us every Sunday by dialing 323-679-0841 or go on Blog Talk Radio format and type in Africa on the Moon. We ask you for your support. If you can spread the word and share our programs with your listening support network, and we want to build our listenership in the next 3 months to an additional 100,000 people. Yes, we need this information. We may not give you what you want, but we can do the best to give you what you need. We know that without information, we cannot think. And we know that without organization, we cannot think clearly. So we want to encourage you to join an organization that is fighting for your people. We ask you to help build this institution, Africa on the Moon. But even more importantly, we want you to politically educate yourself so you can have a better understanding of the world, so you put yourself in a better position of changing it for what you think the world should be. So what we're going to do at this point in time, we're going to take a revolutionary culture break, and when we come back, this is part two of the three-part series, Haiti, Guyana, and West, and we will have our panelists' final thoughts on today's program. You're listening to Africa on the Moon.
Arrayed against us are, and I use the word most carefully, formidable. They are intense and powerful. They are, as I have taken some pains to explain, the forces of imperialism acting through their instruments, new colonialism and colonialism, ably assisted by the agents of the Cold War. They operate in worldwide combinations at all levels, political, economic, military, cultural, educational, social, and trade. And not all, and through intelligence, cultural, and information services. They operate from European and African centers, using agents who, I'm ashamed to say, are often unpatriotic sons of Africa, buying personal satisfactions with the betrayal of their country's safety and integrity. They seduce leaders. They seduce leaders of the African political, trade union, and people's organization, thus creating rifts and quarrels within the national front. On the broader front, they are amassing their forces in a determined effort to stay the advance of African liberation and the march of unity. It is not accidental that the countries of the European Common Market and those spearheading the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the imperialist powers who have brought in their vassals, Spain and Portugal. Portugal, in fact, since the wars of the Spanish Succession, 1700 to 1714, being a protectorate of Britain, which has enjoyed special trading and unnecessary rights in both Portugal and in the Portuguese territories for over 200 years. It is not difficult to understand, therefore, why Britain has not raised her voice against the atrocities in Angola and other protected Portuguese territories, and actually supported Portugal's preposterous claim at Goa in India, was an integral part of the multipolitan country. The arms and troops that are pouring into Angola cannot be regarded in isolation from the international organization of imperialism and the Cold War militarism with which they are most definitely linked. It is absurd to think that Portugal, one of the poorest countries in Europe, it's a fact, could support so large an army, so well equipped, as that which is defending her colonial possession in Africa without the active aid it must be receiving from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Nor can we look upon the way in which South Africa is busily building up an armed force equal to any held by the nations of Europe without sensing the international implications that are obviously involved. She has, we hear, a secret military pact with Portugal. And the interlocking imperialist interests collected in the Congo and the Rhodesias, Angola and Mozambique, which are also linked with the great mining and financial interests operating in South Africa, create a chain of allies which seriously threatens both the fight for extending African emancipation from colonialism and independence of the new African state. Now that African independence has been achieved over a large part of the continent, and the national consciousness of Africans from north to south, from east to west, is adding momentum to the struggle for independence, every kind of means is being used by the colonialists to arrest its progress and defeat its objective. They are attempting many methods, some sinister, some beguiling, to wreck our efforts. They strike antipathetic postures. On one side, they perform acts calculated to strike fear. On the other, they try to hoodwink us with fictitious gifts, which superficially pander to our hopes and aspirations. They are
the president's attempts to deflect our purpose, to weaken our determination.
Continuation to part 3 next week as you join us at 7 p.m. and that will be on the 21st of April. Spread the word. So let's go back to our political panelists and analysts as we close out this particular program. As we were discussing the issue of African people were not ready for freedom. And we'll have our final thoughts from Brother Moses. Brother Moses, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Brother Africa. I think, you know, we have to recognize that the world is moving in a certain direction, that progress is being made, and that we have to be in flow with history. I believe in getting to the root, i.e. radical. Jesus and the Bible propagate the laissez-faire philosophy of early merchants, and there's no getting around, quote, waiting for his return, unquote. Remember, there were no churches until John the Baptist and Jesus started the movement. It is well suited for the ruling class to continue ruling. I'm into liberation theology. Jesus reconciled humans and the God question. You don't reverse correct verdicts. That's why I bear witness that the only God is Jesus and that Mao is his messenger for government. The word is truth, and only the truth can set you free. There is a judgment day coming. There will be a revolution. Repetition is the mother of invention. Moses went to the mountain. Jesus was the mountain. The mountain came to Muhammad. He said, what's love got to do with it? These Christians are oppressing my people. And he wrote the Quran. Only a fool would say there is no God. Mao was the Fuzhou man who moved the mountain. The people of China stormed heaven in 1949. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Sister Eleanor, your final words, please. Your final thoughts.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to participate in this evening's forum, Brother Africa. And it's certainly been impressive because the bottom line is it is a major struggle against the masses, against the imperialists, the neo-colonialists, and the colonialists. And we have to take our gains wherever we can as a society. And the best way to change the community appears to be to change the community where you stand. Now, that includes uniting with the international community and having solidarity and becoming aware of international struggles. And we've seen some great advancements in recent months with several countries, Francophone countries, and shaking off the shackles of the French. And we see a real struggle in Niger right now to get the U.S. out. And the biggest struggle right now is the expansion of NATO and the expansion of the U.S. military into the Southern Hemisphere, into the Caribbean. And we look forward to Africa on the Move. I know I do every week. I have an opportunity to learn such fascinating and wonderful things in real time happening to real nation states and real people. And once again, thank you. And I hope everyone remembers April 16th, 1862. That's when the blacks or the Africans that were victims of chattel slavery were emancipated. But it wasn't a gift. It was something, a victory hard won and hard fought for. And, you know, I read an article today on women and hair and black women and cornrows, and it suggested that since reading was kept from the slaves, that in Colombia, South America, that the slaves used their cornrows to give directions to people that were a part of the underground movement, moving away from slavery to freedom. So, I mean, the people continue to struggle. Women have always been a great part of that struggle. And the one thing I have to remind everyone, the fighters against chattel slavery were the slaves themselves. There weren't enough of anyone, enough Frederick Douglasses or enough Quakers to set the slaves free. They set themselves free. They hid each other on plantations and helped each other move to Pennsylvania and away from chattel slavery in Maryland and Virginia. So thank you so much, Brother Africa. And to my fellow panelists and our listening audience, have a great week. I look forward to joining you next week. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, and thank you, Sister Eleanor. Next, get our final thoughts from Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, your final thoughts for tonight.
Thanks for having me, Brother Africa. My final thoughts for tonight are that we must organize and politically educate each other. And one way of doing that is by joining an organization that is working for our people's liberation. One such organization is the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. You can find out more about our objective and program by visiting our website at www.a-aprp-gc.org. And also, you can find out information about our upcoming African Liberation Day, Not By Day commemoration, which is coming up May 18th and 19th, 2024 of this year. Please check out our website for more information and check it out on a regular basis because more information is forthcoming about that. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. And speaking about African Liberation Day and Nakba Day, we'll be having a special segment next Sunday, next show. So to our listening audience, please tune in. As the brothers have stated, check out the website, www.a-aprp-gc.org. Thank you, Brother Anthony, for your contribution to today's program. We thank you. Brother Haki, your final thoughts for tonight. The mic is yours.
Let me just briefly warn of some real impending crisis as it relates to the African community inside the United States. One of the things historically, when we look in terms of tax cuts, we recognize that, you know, three Republican presidents of the past, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, George W. Bush, and Trump, gave huge tax breaks to the very, very wealthy people. Of course, those large tax breaks to very, very wealthy people had devastating impact on the U.S. economy. superimposed upon the fact we talk about currently, we talk about a national debt that's unprecedented. So we're talking about officially $34 trillion of national debt. Unofficially, we're talking about $38 trillion of national debt. So what does that mean in terms of the aspirations of the masses of people inside the United States? It means that not only will the question in terms of employment will become problematic, but more importantly, it means that the country has a lot of people it doesn't have any need for. And the question for those in positions of power is, what do we do with all those people we no longer have need for? Now, and this question is particularly problematic when we think about the fact that they're proposing tax cuts to Social Security. Now, keep in mind, this process of getting rid of Social Security haven't just started. It's been ongoing. Every Republican administrator since Bush have been going into this trust fund, removing money from Social Security, increasing the debt or creating a deficit for Social Security. So ironically, when you think about Social Security in terms of people's ability in terms of, you know, living, you know, after they retire, if you get rid of Social Security, then what are you going to do with all those people who don't have any means in terms of, forget about poverty, who don't have any means in terms of just sheer survival? It creates a tremendous problem in terms of stability for the system. Something has to happen to all those people the system no longer needs. I said to the African community, in all seriousness, we better understand that the problems that we're confronted with is not hyperbole. It's no joke. This is very serious stuff, and I encourage people, please, read as much as you possibly can in terms of what's going on economically in the society, because the more you understand economically what's going on in society, the better you prepare yourself for an eventuality down the road. And in saying that, Brother Africa, I always encourage people to unravel the matrix. That is key. There's a lot of things that are going on in society, a lot of changes that doesn't bode well in terms of the interests of humanity, specifically the African community. That doesn't bode well for the community generally, specifically for the African community. So given that reality, we got no other recourse but understanding the reality of what's going on. We can ill afford to turn our backs in terms of what's really going on. Having said that, Brother Africa, you have a good night.
Thank you, Brother Hackey. You do the same. We'd like to thank our listening audience, allowing us to come at home this evening to speak truth to the powerful and the powerless. We remind everyone, Africa on the Move is a radio program that comes on every Sunday. We look forward to seeing you next Sunday on the 21st at 7 p.m. For our friends and supporters who would like to support our work and support this radio station, you can do that by sending your donation, your flowers to us by Cash App, $SMALL, SMALL E, SMALL C, SMALL R, SMALL O, SMALL B. You help increase the listenership by sharing our link. If you'd like to have a link of this program and others, please just email us at AfricaOnTheMove2@gmail.com. Again, we'd like to thank everybody for allowing us to come to your home this evening, spread the word. And like always, let's strive to go forward ever, backwards never. We'll see you next week. And don't forget, we'll have a little special segment next week on African Liberation Day and Nakba Day, Palestine Day. Make sure you check out next week's program. And let's travel down this road of liberation. It's the only road that you can travel that will free you. So again, we're going to strive to move forward ever, backwards never. We're going to stand in the seat and kick the heat. As we define it, we're going to stand behind it. We love Africa, and we love you. Until next time, let's fight for our freedom and liberation. This has been Brother Africa, and you have been listening to Africa on the Move. So we leave you with the song, Not Yet Yoruba, which translates into, We Are Not Yet Free. This is Africa on the Move.
Ooh, old Compton. Fresh out East Atlanta with no mountains or bells. Fresh out East Atlanta, bump up like a traffic jam. Pay that girl like, here you go, hey, bring it on me, hey. Try to crave it on me, get the beating on me, on me. She waited on me, damn, well, try to cake it on me, got the bacon on me, ring bell. This is history and I'm making homie, on me. Point blank, close range, that be. If you go to million, that be me. I was getting moolah, baby.
Hey, Havana, ooh-na-na.
Hey,
half of my heart is in Havana. Yeah.
He is my king. He's my one. Yes, he's my father. Yes, he's my son. I can talk to him, cause he understands everything I go through and everything I am. He's my support system. I can't live without him. The best thing since sliced bread is his kiss, his hug, his lips, his touch. And I just want the whole world to know about my black brother. I love you and I'll never try to hurt you. I want you to know that I'm here for you forever too. Cause you're my black brother, strong brother, and there is no one above you. I want you to know that I'm here for you forever too. He's misunderstood. Some say that he's up to no good around the neighborhood. But for your information, a lot of my brothers got education. Now check it, you got your Wall Street brother, your blue collar brother, you're down for whatever, chilling on the corner brother, your talented brother. And to every one of y'all behind bars, you know that Angie loves you. But my black brother,
I'm not afraid to black man, go on and get a CAT scan. I heard same rap too straight, too tight. We get a backhand, there ain't no Batman in this black land. I wish a rich nigga would come and save the day and pave the way. Ain't no amazing grace, I blaze the haze to remain the faith. 20 years for my medicine, but they wanna throw me away for that, then turn around and legalize it. I wish being black was truly accepted. 400 year elephant in the room, this ain't a new deal. They've been treating us like animals, we in a zoo still. So let me tell you how I feel. Guilty conscience trumps common sense every day, y'all. Ignore the issues, look at the victim like it's their fault. As if a wagon ain't harassing, waiting for jaywalkers. They're in front of the building, minding your business. You was trying to pay your bills as if that wasn't to mention. Conjunction, junction, tell me what's your intention. Don't call them kings and treat them like some common folk. You a fighter like Ronda Rose, drowsy move around the rope. Drowsy with a cloud of smoke, howdy do for Maui, bro. Traveling around the globe, you didn't know, but now you know. Early morning rising, my end of alarm kicking. Birdman hand rubs, feeling my palms itching. I need a spiritual thought with top, that's top notch. We watch Black Paradox and study our chakras.
Ooh, child, don't you ever calm down. You acting like the sun ain't out. But we gon' cop a ticket, let's fly on out. It can't fly on out. Ooh, child, don't you ever calm down. You acting like the sun ain't out. And we gon' cop a ticket, let's fly on out. It can't fly on out.
Oh dear black man, tell me what happened. You can't be low with your blows everlasting. Then where your ass been, on ass been like a has been. Raising but trapped in the guard spoke mapping moves with a max in. Not that nigga back then, but look now nigga, I'm established. Cut camera action, I cut lines with my sad card. My bitch is packing, then I'm cutting in line with a bad boy. They caught him flagging, then huddle around him with a stat chart. Look, he say I wake up feeling better than I ever been. Check out my melanin, it's not the makeup for the mannequin that wants to be the same as a slave on a sedative. You kill culture, I give knowledge, I spit stylish. Crane kicks and Balenciagas and speaking science. And bodegas that grow flavors was taught language. Was taught to talk with the razor from having Spanish neighbors. I fought the haters, court cases and lost paper. Educated killers walking no ladies cross the street. Turn back around, walk across the cell hard to a fee. No turning back now, rent you and your kids gotta eat, yeah. Black man you the deep with the blood of a king, yeah. Black man roses a rose from the cold concrete. I eat, walk, talk, grit, snitches get buck 50. One slice, buck 50, don't get cut quickly. Until they free Goldie, nobody can fuck with me.
Oh, child, don't you ever calm down. You acting like the sun ain't out. No, no, we don't cop a ticket, it'll fly on out. It can't fly on out. Oh, child, don't you ever calm down. You acting like the sun ain't out.
Black became beautiful, then made America great again. See the page of history or see the grave of hate again. I'm from New York, the last state to free the slaves, and now we getting to the point where they rebooting Martin Payne and them. Black man, switch it up, just to be versatile. Why you always mean mugging? Man, it never hurts to smile. Make a record, break a record, get the record straight. I'm just trying to get it going, I'm trying to accelerate. Life alert, welcome to my world. Live and living color, stay low, word to J-Lo out here with my fly girl. Black man, black man, they give you whack answers. They robbing you with Batman, they shoot you Black Panther. When all our people dying, they think that we need a movie. But the box office don't break off the Descendants of Huey. Think about it, I'm cooler than a Coca-Cola polar bear. Hold up, roll up something potent right before we go in there. Maroon Customs, support that shit that touches the streets. Puffing a leaf on a corner that gave me nothing but grief. Don't come around my way if your whole message is how much you got. You ain't got no fucking shot, then don't touch the fucking rock. Lucy's still 50 Cent, cool, what kind of blunts you got? You can lock a few niggas for hustling, but nothing stops. The judge just makes a hero, and a young black boy lose their fucking pops and go on a robbing spree like fuck the ops. Phone out of battery, Black Mirror, word to Windex. King of the table of contents, human index. I handle everything myself, the one man quintet. Let's take it where it hasn't been yet. Dear black man, worth life. One take.